Blog Talk Radio.
Her Unfolding Journey with your host, Mark Zumpel,
is a show for women in today's world. Mark is a spiritual relationship coach and a passionate consultant dedicated to empowering women to embrace their divine sensuality and experiencing the gift they truly are. Mark creates a safe space for women to share their inner self and provides tools to help women as they unfold on their journey. For more information on Mark, please visit his websites at www.herunfoldingjourney.com and www.thismanknowspassion.com.
Now please welcome your host of Her Unfolding Journey, Mark Zumpel.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Her Unfolding Journey. I am Mark Zumpel, and as always, I am deeply honored you're taking a time out from your journey to be a part of mine, or actually ours, because Monday night I get to dance with the amazing Tina Marie Bernard, and I'd like to go ahead and introduce her real quick. Tina Marie, are you on the line?
I am. Thank you so much for having me back.
Oh, my pleasure. We just had so much fun the last time, and you have so much greatness and insights to share with the world and make it a more fulfilled, healthier, loving space. I learn something every time I connect with you. So we got a really interesting topic to dance around on tonight. Would you like to let the listeners know what that is?
Yes, we're going to dive right into the topic of sexual and relationship wound.
Beautiful.
And I'll start with, thank you, I'll start with a quote from somebody I've learned quite a bit from, and that's David Cates, who is an intimacy coach, and he works particularly with men, and he says this: if you have been sexually active in America, you've got battle scars. If you're like most people, you work around them. And when I say sexual or relationship wounds, I think the first thing people will think of is sexual violence. And indeed, sexual violence is very prevalent in our society. Estimates are that in any given day, 500 women are raped in the United States. 60 million Americans have survived childhood sexual abuse, and the really riveting case out of Penn State, I think, really drew to our attention just how easy it can happen right beneath our noses, and how people could turn away when children are being sexually abused. Genital trauma is widespread in terms of, say, women who have had traumatic childbirth and then have scar tissue. And I can also speak to, and I will speak shortly to my own experience with sexual wounding. But I also wanted to get into the more ambiguous, or I should say the less discussed relationship wounds. People listening have experienced either betrayal, somebody they loved left them or spoke to them or behaved with them in a way that just left them deeply afraid to love again. Body image challenges, and it's not just women who suffer from body image, although that is really a prevalent problem. You know, I'm too fat, I'm too short, I'm not young enough. I have a friend who's a photographer, and she really works extensively on what she calls the body wars, helping women through photographs see their true beauty, their true physical beauty, and let their inner beauty shine through the photographs. Loneliness. People are craving meaningful intimacy. You know, for all the people who are in a relationship and have the benefit, the gift, the opportunity to work out their needs within a relationship, consider all of those individuals who, for whatever reason, are not in a relationship and they would like to be. Maybe it's fear of intimacy, fear of abandonment. And, of course, loneliness is much different than being alone. Being alone by choice has a different charge to it than being lonely and craving meaningful connection. Sexual shame is a big one for people. Think about how our society is very polarized on the issue of sexuality. And we talked about this last time, how on one end, sexual imagery is used by the media to sell everything from television to toasters. Women's bodies are compartmentalized. truncated, chopped up, you know, breasts are used to sell things, etc. And then on the other hand, the messages about sexuality, what's appropriate, when you can make love, you know, how you can express it, are very much put in sort of a narrow little box. And we can talk in a bit about the upcoming changes that have been proposed to the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual 5, which is coming out next year, 2013. Fear of intimacy, abandonment, anxiety, performance anxiety. You know, men have body images and performance anxiety issues too. It's not just women who feel, you know, my body isn't acceptable, beautiful, or desirable enough. And so giving this broad overview of the various sexual wounds and relationship wounds we come into as we mature, it's no wonder that there is a lot of pain in people's minds and hearts over the issue of physical and emotional intimacy. So in the spirit of transparency, I will share where my sexual wound first began, and that was really in my first marriage. I developed a condition, I think I mentioned this in the previous show, and I've, you know, got public with this, but it's very widespread. Tens of thousands of women experience pain during intercourse, and in my particular case, I developed something called vulvar vestibulitis, so say that three times fast. And the vestibular glands are located within, just inside the body, just inside the vagina, and these are responsible for creating vaginal lubrication. And these are just glands that happen to, we have a few pairs of them, and I'm not going to get too technical on you. No, I don't want to get scientific, basically, because this is not an anatomy. This is not an anatomy show. But these glands are necessary. They need to operate properly and functionally, because without appropriate, you know, ubiquitous vaginal lubrication, sex is not comfortable. And in my case, I developed a condition called vulvar vestibulitis, which meant these glands were inflamed. Anything with itis just means inflammation. And inflamed tissue right at the opening of the vagina makes it very difficult to have any kind of pleasurable intimacy or penetrative penile vaginal sex. So for 6 years in my first marriage, I was virtually anorgasmic, which means I could not have orgasms because there was so much pain associated with intercourse that I avoided intercourse at all costs. And as you can imagine, what that does in a relationship where sex is an important component to creating and building bonds and intimacy, it's, you know, it's how adults play together. It was one of the contributing factors to that marriage no longer lasting. And so when I finally went to the physician, I was really embarrassed. This went on for several years before I even went to the doctor. And when I went to the physician, this was about 10 years ago, I had to go to the OB-GYN because on a lark, on a vacation, I got pregnant. And, you know, it was one of these, like, once-a-year experiences. I mean, that's really how infrequent our lovemaking was. And so here I had to really face the writing on the wall. The pink elephant was right out there, and she was dancing in her tutu on her tippy toes. So I went into the physician to confirm the pregnancy, and she said to me, is there anything else that you'd like to talk about? And I remember just squeaking, yeah, it hurts when I have sex. And so she then did something called the Q-tip test. And the Q-tip test is really all what it says. They take a Q-tip, they put it inside your vagina, and they touch on the tissue just inside on the opening. And I screamed like you can't imagine. It was so painful just to have a Q-tip touch my body. And so my physician used that to be able to diagnose me. Now, I was pregnant at the time, so the options available to me were somewhat limited and included basically lidocaine, which meant numbing my vagina to have sex. Wrap your head around that. Numbing my vagina to have sex was the very well-intended solution from my physician. The problem with that, obviously, is numbing anything when you're trying to experience pleasure is really unproductive. And it goes to the fact that we know so little of the cause of this disorder. In my case, again, vulvar vestibulitis. Now, I asked her what causes this, and she told me that it is something often seen in women who have been the victims of sexual violence. Now, I have never been raped in my life. I've never been molested. But I was in a relationship that was emotionally very unfulfilling. There was a lack of meaningful intimacy in that marriage. And it was, in hindsight, I look back, and it was my body speaking to me. And it was saying very clearly, this was not the place for me. This was not the relationship for me to continue being in. Another thing that my physician told me at the time was that this was akin to an allergic reaction. And in my head, I remember thinking to myself, oh, my God, I'm allergic to my husband. Which, I mean, it's kind of funny in hindsight, but at the time, it was like I just wanted to crawl underneath the paper gown and just turn invisible and hide, because that's really how I felt. So this was over 10 years ago. I went home. I told my husband at the time, this is what's going on, this is the diagnosis, and I really was hoping for him to work with me in terms of being, recognizing that there was a real physical diagnosis for why I was not able to have penile-vaginal intercourse. And the assignment from the physician was, in addition to using lidocaine, to have non-penetrative sexual pleasure. You can imagine, though, if you're a fella and you've been in a marriage where there's not a whole lot of nookie going on for a long time, stepping out of your own like needs and saying, okay, fine, I'm going to pleasure you for however long it needs, and I'm going to forego my own sexual pleasure, it wasn't easy for him to hear. And ultimately, over the course of the next few years, it just didn't happen. So on top of the sexual wound, which I developed, I believe, in response to a relationship that was devastatingly not compatible with me, I then had this relationship wound of feeling all the things I mentioned to you earlier, which is lonely, shame, anxiety, fear of intimacy, abandonment. So I share this in real spirit of transparency because there are people who are listening to this who have never heard of this disorder I have, and they're suffering from it right now. I mean, the number of women is estimated in the tens of thousands who have painful sex. And I'm just talking about women who've had not necessarily an easy-to-identify etiology. We haven't even talked about women who have been either raped or assaulted or, come from particular cultures that, for example, engage in female genital mutilation or gave birth to a baby and had an episiotomy that didn't heal properly, so they have scar tissue in the perineum and the vaginal canal. So you can see that these sexual wounds are, first of all, they're widespread, and they have a complicated etiology. I mean, we don't know necessarily where they come from, and it's not just one thing. So the estimates are that 35% of males will experience some sexual dysfunction in their lifetime, in American males, and that 43% of females will experience some sort of sexual dysfunction in their lifetime. So this whole concept of sexual wounding, relationship wounding, and dysfunction is a very complicated mess that needs to be detangled. And so that is why I want to open this up to callers if they're interested in sharing their stories, and also for those who aren't so comfortable sharing, at least to listen up, because I'm really happy to say that I'm no longer identified that by those sexual wounds or those relationship wounds. I was able to heal my experience in a very deep and meaningful way through the work that I do. And I look now at that sexual wound as one of the greatest gifts I ever received. You hear people who say, they had an accident and they lost their eyesight and their blindness is the greatest gift they now have because they're able to see and feel things in a different way. Or they became paralyzed and they turned that as that experience of losing the ability to move parts of their body as into their purpose. For me, the sexual wound became the genesis for my own transformation. And I couldn't stand here today and be able to impact and help other people not overcome or survive their own sexual stories, but actually thrive past them, leave them behind, and then start in this very now moving forward.
Well, Tina Marie, you are so absolutely amazing. I mean, first off, your authenticity and openness is such a great gift. It's such a rarity to find that. You're so beautifully sharing your own personal journey and pain. And, you know, that's a gift to other people, too, just to let them know they're not alone. And, you know, this is a common thing, but there is help and there are things you can do. And, yeah, that's so absolutely beautiful. And anybody listening in, we are ready to take calls. If you want to get on the air with Mark and Tina Marie, please call back in. We had one beautiful spirit on the line there, but I didn't get to her in time. So please feel free to call back in, and we will take your calls as we go. One thing that I would kind of like to comment on was, you know, you covered such a spectrum on the wounds there. I mean, there is true trauma, you know, physical abuse, like from, you know, being raped or forcibly taken and so on. And then there is the stuff that's between our ears, the result of our shame or our conditioning or a byproduct, a physical response to a relationship that's not really fulfilling. And bringing that awareness to the table is such a beautiful thing to do, because, you know, there are some things that you need very specific treatments and therapies for to overcome, to release that energy and that trauma about. And then there's other things where the resolution is a little bit simpler. Oh, and we have a caller back on the line. Would you be willing to take a call?
Sure, absolutely.
Healing for Inner Peace, you are on the air with Mark and Tina. Who are we talking to?
Namaste, this is Mark, Healing for Inner Peace.
Hey, Mark.
Yeah, I mean, this, you know, myself, you know, those of us that do the healing work, and I've also worked in the nursing field as a nursing assistant. And what do you see as far as with the transformation and evolving humanity, and what our role as healers, and of course, as you know, the medical field really needs to move forward in their evolution, because the old ways and drug companies and all that is of the old paradigm in the past. So where do you see our role as the healers and those working in the field to help humanity when it comes to working with them directly, one-on-one or with the groups?
Mark, you want to take that first?
I would absolutely be honored. First and foremost, we get to just let people know that there is an alternative. We're not here to do battle with mainstream medical or pharmaceutical. We are just simply here to show people and open their minds and enlighten them that there are alternate ways. Tina Marie has an amazing group on Facebook that we'll share on in a little bit that is devoted to helping people green their love life, come back to nature, get closer to ecosexuality and sustainable love, you know, truly fulfilling intimacy that can endure. And it's sometimes it's not a mass media type thing. It's one heart and mind at a time. And just simply be you, be willing, live your life, focus on your journey, practice what you are looking to share with other people, and trust that you are going to connect with the people that you're meant to connect with. You'll make a difference in them, and they're going to turn around, and they'll make a difference in somebody else, and it's just going to multiply like that. What do you think, Tina Marie?
Yeah, I agree. I think that, first of all, what I think differentiates a visionary or somebody who is a healer is their ability to tell stories. And by that I mean your story is a healing gift to the next person. Now, of course, there goes all these other modalities. Maybe somebody's trained in energy work or massage therapy or, you know, Chinese medicine or you know, they're an herbalist. I'm not dismissing the formal education. But what I'm saying is that the vital role of being somebody who's healed is that you actually can hold safe space. So that is why I, for one, tell my story, because then that invites another person to actually take a deep breath and be able to share their story. And once we've looked at that, once we've examined it, it no longer has power. I held my I held the secret for years. I was so ashamed. I thought that I was broken bits and pieces. And then the moment I went public with my own experience with a sexual wound, it completely lost its power over me. It was like saying to somebody, look at those beautiful clouds. It just was. That's all. So the first thing as a healer that you do is you do tell stories, and then you're also the recipient of other people's stories, because then they develop that trust and that relationship with you. It's all the bond, right?
Right.
So that is the individual-to-individual experience. Now, let's talk about Big Pharma. I will let you know I spent 11 years selling drugs for a major pharmaceutical corporation. I don't believe that Big Pharma in itself is actually the enemy. I believe it's the lack of communication that is the clearest block between having all options on the table. So what I mean by that is allopathic medicine has its place. Where we have lost out and where we really need to build up is the bridge between allopathic and holistic medicine. When I was selling pharmaceuticals, and I did that until 2009, I did it from 1998 to 2009 for a major corporation, multi-billion-dollar corporation. I was very happy to see that over time, more and more physicians were incorporating acupuncture, nutrition, massage, all of these alternative modalities into their practice. Not everybody was, but individual physicians were coming up with the courage to say, I don't have the answer that in my medical training, but I've seen the miracle that can be worked with the combination. And so if we can build these bridges, and that takes dialogue, that I think is really the beauty, that is the rug we can weave, and the magic carpet we can weave, and we can all soar. With that said, I'll also say that our extreme dependence on pills is a problem. Let's talk about the DSM-5 that's coming out May 2013, and there's a couple of conditions, diagnoses that they want to put in there. One of them is called female orgasmic disorder, and the other one is female sexual interest or arousal disorder. And then they also suggest that they need to do more work in something called hypersexual disorder. Now, you see the problem here? On one hand, you're not interested enough. You can't have an orgasm, or you can't be aroused. But if you're too aroused, you have a problem too. The solution for me, and I'm going to be very clear, I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm not a physician. I'm not part of the panel. I'm just making an observation as a layperson who has 11 years in pharmaceutical sales and also has a background in science and research, is that we have got to stop pathologizing our sexuality, and we're going to have to start looking at it with more realistic, loving lenses, with believing eyes. And that is where the work of ecosexuality, in my opinion, will make the difference. It made the difference in my life, and that's why I do the work I do as a coach and an author and an educator, is helping people get back to nature, their own nature, reclaiming pleasure as a healing, as a way for self-healing, and understanding that when we continue to make love and make babies in a toxic soup, sex will not be as great as it can be. Does that help answer your question?
Yeah, it does. I mean, I think what you have to share is definitely very important, and a lot of it is also for the healing aspect. Is there's a lot of things that are created by our culture around sexuality that causes a lot of mental, emotional issues and problems and confusion that most are not aware of. And that includes the effect in whether it be in the models, modeling, to the music and so forth, and messages from all of that.
Well, you're absolutely right. And we're going to be touching on some of that stuff here in just a little bit.
Let me jump into that and say that to the caller. I'll let you know, I'm a mother of two. I've got a 4-year-old and a 9-year-old. I write about sex all day long. We don't have TV in the home. We don't have fashion magazines for that very reason. At the same time, my children are the most aware children in their age group that I know of personally in terms of their bodies, their body's function.
Mm-hmm.
We've got it backwards. We're so afraid as a society to teach our children anything about their bodies, how they function, or pleasure, and yet we slam them with images that are hypersexualized. And it really is creating, it's creating what I call sexophrenic syndrome. And I don't mean that to offend anybody with schizophrenia. As someone once said to me, that's not so kind. It's not to diss people with mood disorders. It's just to point out how pathological this is for a healthy sexual experience and how it blocks the natural flow of sexual vitality and energy.
Right.
So let me give you an example. My son is almost 10 years old, and I don't think I even told you this happened, but I got a call from the camp counselor last week that my son had been scolded for using bad language. And I said to the counselor, well, can you please let me know what kind of bad language he was using? Then a couple of days later, I run into the camp counselor, the camp director, and he says to me, it wasn't bad language that your son got in trouble for. He got in trouble for bad talk. And so knowing my son as he is, he's a really precocious, bright, self-confident little boy, I'm thinking to myself, oh, he talked back to somebody. And so that's the assumption I made. I said, you mean he talked back? And he said, no, it was bad talk. So that's when my eyebrow goes up, and I'm thinking to myself, what is bad talk? And I come to find out that one child who's a little older than him, I should qualify that my son goes to a religious-oriented camp. A child who was a little older than my son, meaning about 11, said that he was praying for his parents to have another sibling. And when my son heard this, he said, that's not where babies come from. Moms and dads make babies together.
Oh,
whoa.
And
right.
That's what the school labeled as bad talk.
Now,
right.
Yeah, I know. Fortunately, you know, I looked at the camp director, and he said that to me. I looked right back at him, and I said, you need to know something. This is the work I do. We are past the conversation of procreation and my son, the biology of his body. We have now moved into sexuality is a natural part of adult life and experience. This is how grown-ups play together. This is how they show an affection for one another. This is what mothers and fathers do in the context of a loving, respectful relationship. We're into conversations of no means no. Don't do something you don't want to do. Don't ask somebody to do something they don't want to do. We're into respect, love, affection, the sacredness of sexuality. He's not even 10 years old, and these are the conversations we're having.
Right.
People are afraid to have those conversations because they believe they're going to wound their kid with information.
Right. Yeah.
It's not.
I think you'll find this amusing. I'm a Blog Talk Radio show host as well. And, you know, I share my channel with another friend, Kimberly. And the name of it is Be Love Now.
I'm listening. Go on.
Yeah, I'm just think of it. Be Love Now. And in the context of everything that you're talking about, that can be taken from, you know, either from the sexual or from the truly spiritual perspective, depending on where your mindset is and beliefs.
Yes, absolutely. I think that my goal as a mother and as an intimacy coach is really to bring our conversations into the, you know, raise our awareness and our consciousness on this issue. And so I'm happy to hear that other people, that you've got to show that you're doing this now, because it's desperately needed. It is desperately needed, and to be even more specific about the issue of children and raising children who can have meaningful, loving relationships, particularly in our porn or our internet porn saturated society, is I just lost my train of thought there. I'm so sorry. In my world, we call those brain farts. Well, we need these conversations. And so my goal is that I want my children to grow up in a world where this is no longer an issue, where we're no longer trying to pathologize sexuality, minimize it, contain it, and particularly female sexuality. I mean, what goes on in the world, around the world, to curtail female sexuality is so rooted in fear as opposed to rooted in love. Would you agree?
Yes, most definitely.
Mark,
I absolutely agree with what you're saying, and you know, there is just so much conditioning that does actually help set the stage for those wounds as we do grow older in our lives. And Mark, I appreciate you spending some time with us. Did Tina Marie answer your question?
I believe so. You know, I would love, you know, talk with both of you more off air at some point. But
okay.
I mean, this is definitely an interesting topic in that, you know, because you can work with it on so many different levels of the evolution of the humanity and the restrictions and limitations that are placed on us by religion, by education, so on and so forth. It can go on and on and on where it all comes from and what we need to do to heal, to change within society, to evolve in that level.
Absolutely, and we're all doing sacred work, my friend. Please stay tuned. At the end of the show, you'll get contact information for Tina Marie and I, and we'd love to talk with you more, tell you about our group, bring your energy in, and we'll see what we can do to make this a more fulfilled, sexually healthier space. That sound good?
Yeah, I'm sending you a private message, my email address, so we can get in touch.
Wonderful. Mark, thank you for being a part of Her Unfolding Journey, and I look forward to keeping in touch with you.
All right. Love, and blessings.
Okay, bye for now.
Well, I'm so glad that somebody called and asked that, because I think when we consider sexual wounding and the prevalence that's going on in the world, and we haven't even talked about, for example, child sex trafficking.
Right.
I mean, it is expansive and explosive, and but I do believe that, I mean, we can be horrified by the numbers. In terms of the statistics about rape, molestation, sex trafficking, what's going on in the world around us in those numbers. The numbers, they can be really, really frightening. So I would, and I don't mean to dismiss that as a very important topic. I think, though, our work, Mark, you and I focus on the individual, the ordinary man and woman, who doesn't necessarily have some horrifying story rattling in their closet. It's just, it's the ordinary stuff that can cripple us.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And you know what kind of came up for me as you were talking about sexual wounds earlier when we connected was it's really anything that impedes you from enjoying this most sublime, amazing experience possible between two or more human beings. And you know, anything at all, whether it's, you know, mental, physical, spiritual, you name it, if it gets in the way of you feeling good and comfortable and natural and whole about sex, or, you know, if you don't think about sex and feel excitement, you know, you have sex out of obligation, regardless of, you know, you're tired or in pain or whatever, then, you know, that's not a good space. And however people are feeling in the moment simply is. And there is no wrong to it. A lot of times, you know, we feel the way we do around sex, like, you know, we don't quite feel the way that our partner thinks we should in the moment because, you know, we have a problem or we're sick or, you know, we just don't feel like having sex. But then we feel bad because they are not happy with us. And that kind of compounds the situation. You know, and if you go ahead and do something that's not really what you want to do, it may feel like a noble thing, but then you're going to feel bad again because you just gave in. And that's not really what it is all about here. It's about fulfillment and passion and ease and flow. You know, like say, you know, with sex, if it hurts, you're doing it wrong. You know, there's something that's not quite in alignment.
I think it's an important thing you just said, if it hurts. I would like to differentiate here between what I call pain and harm. Neurologically, the pathways for pain and pleasure, and I'm not going to get specific, but just make a general statement here, and it can be verified. If people are interested, they can contact me, and I'll give them more specifics. But neurologically, the neurobiology of pain and pleasure including sexual pain and pleasure, are actually intriguingly run along the same neural pathways. So I want to differentiate between pain and harm, because there are some people who really legitimately do like to have some what might be perceived or identified as sensation of pain, and that they find that sexually arousing. And that to me is not the same as a sexual wound. I just want to clarify that. When I talk about harm, I am talking about, for example, coercive sexuality. And that's what you just said right there. Feeling pressure to do something you don't want to do, and the psychological or physical or mental harm that that's caused as a result of you saying yes when you really meant no. And so this is a nuanced conversation. And sometimes it feels like it's an exercise in semantics, but ultimately the most healing thing a person can do is be radically honest with themselves about what it is that they need and desire when it comes to sexual experiences. And if I can continue the conversation and just share how being diagnosed 10 years ago with vestibulitis led to how that brought me to the ecosexuality movement. May I go there, Mark? Are you all right with that?
Absolutely, Tina Marie. It's all you.
Okay. So I got the diagnosis, and shortly thereafter I gave birth to my son, and I was not in any shape, mental or physical, to deal with this diagnosis. So I went back to being anorgasmic and pretty much asexual, and it was a few years later where I finally had the courage, where I finally listened to my body, and I realized what my body was screaming at the top of its lungs, my sort of body knowledge, the body wisdom, was get out. This wasn't a judgment statement on my husband at the time. It simply was a statement of this was no longer the place for me to dance. Ironically or interestingly enough, we had a very amicable divorce. And then I found myself sitting in my therapist's office bawling because I thought, I am now broken. I will not know how to experience sex or sexual pleasure again. I was no longer capable of having an orgasm or enjoying any kind of physical intimacy. My doctor told me to go to the store and get a vibrator. And one of the treatments for this is to, is basically to engage in masturbation and use different size vibrators, starting with smaller, going bigger, to sort of open up the vaginal opening, dilate it with self care. And so I did that, and I remember it was the first time I went to a sex shop with the actual intention of buying something. And I remember I had a couple of girlfriends propping me up. I was so nervous and anxious about it, and walked out with my first adult toy. Open up the package, and it smelled like strawberries. Really strong strawberries. I remember that. I had no clue that there was anything wrong with the fact that the toy I was going to use smelled like strawberries. And it was a few years later when I was, I was basically, the prescription for me was masturbation. I was instructed by my physician to self-pleasure and relearn orgasm without a partner. And that process was a very sort of tender reacquaintance with myself. And it is something I've also used when I've been working with clients who have who are struggling with sexual pleasure or anorgasmia. If you can't figure out what turns you on, or you're struggling with the shame of touching yourself, those are areas that need to be worked on, I believe, side by side or a precursor to having a meaningful relationship with another person. So at the time, I thought I was doing everything I was supposed to do. And a few years later, when my writing career had really taken off, I started writing for an environmental website on issues of sexual health, sexuality, dating, love, relationships. She said, I want you to write about these topics from a green perspective. And this was, I had no clue. I hadn't heard about ecosexuality. But it was through that role as an environmental writer, columnist for an online website, that I realized, I learned, oh, my God, the stuff that I was using was toxic. Because that funny strawberry smell was actually due to fragrances that were, you know, artificial fragrances that were petrochemical-based and were toxic to the skin. And then I did some more research, and I found out that most of the over-counter lubrication that I had been using previously with my husband were also toxic to my body because they had ingredients in it that were petrochemical-based, and these were chemicals known to either cause irritation of the skin or lesions or fatigue. So the very prescriptions for healing turned out to be toxic to my body. And I was outraged. And I'm not the first by any means to point out the toxic problem with adult toys and intimacy aids. There are a lot of, as you know, a lot of our friends and colleagues who've been doing that work for, you know, quite a bit longer. But most people still don't realize that the industry is unregulated and they can put anything in there that, you know, it's a self-regulated industry and they can put any kind of material, they can use any kind of plastic they want, for example, which is toxic to the body. Different plastics have different codes and then they have a different level of toxicity. It depends on what they are and, you know, they have estrogen mimickers in there that can, you know, the bottom line is I was outraged to think that I was using things that were actually going to perpetuate physical harm because nobody had told me, because the doctors didn't know. And then I discovered that the way things are in our country in particular is that most of the compounds, most of the chemicals used haven't been tested for reproductive safety. And so for me then realizing just a very personal level that whatever started my sexual wound, whatever was the original etiology of my vestibulitis, it didn't really matter. I needed to now heal myself with means and methods that were really totally natural. And that is where the connection became for me a personal connection between sexuality and environmentalism. And when I'm introducing the idea of ecosexuality to people for the first time, I like to, you know, tell them about some of the work that's been done out there. For example, the author Stephanie Iris Weiss, who wrote the book in 2010 called Ecosex, websites like As You Like It, PDX, which is started by a woman, a friend of ours, Kim Marks, and she's an environmental activist, and all the products she sells have been vetted for, you know, they're eco-friendly. And so I can't emphasize enough that the responsibility is on the consumer's shoulders to make sure that what they're using isn't going to cause additional harm to their bodies. And that is really, we're basically at the infancy right now with this level of awareness, with the chemicals that are used, and not just in sex toys or lubrication, but that's the start for me at least. That is the gateway drug to eco-sex, in my opinion.
Yeah, beautiful insight, as always, Tina. And, you know, just like with some of these medical solutions to health problems, the issues and side effects that they can introduce are oftentimes much more substantial than the ailment that they're actually looking to cause. So, I mean, I love your mission with greening your love life with ecosexuality, sustainable love, because it's so easy to, you know, identify that you do have a wound, an opportunity to heal, and you grab a solution, but then that solution actually introduces you to further problems or more issues down the road. And what we're looking for here is to chart a course out of the drama, out of the chaos, into a simpler, clearer, more fulfilling space. And it doesn't mean that, you know, every vibrator's got bad stuff in it, every lube, etc., but it does mean choose wisely, just like with anything that you put in your body, on your body, around you. some are good, some are great, some are lethal. And you know, take your time, do some research, and you know, some of the products that are out there, you know, like lubes. I was actually a Passion Parties consultant for a while, and you know, they've been very diligent about eliminating certain plastics elements from their toys. And I did learn that like KY jelly was originally created for surgical procedures. It wasn't a sexual enhancement. And you know, people realized the properties, and boom, they discovered a satellite market for this medical product. And there are other products out there that are more natural, they're water-based, they're you know, more in alignment with your body's natural chemistry and pH balance. And finding things that are going to work for you is absolutely essential. And one thing that I would like to just emphasize is just because a particular product or toy, et cetera, doesn't work for you or doesn't have the effect, it does not mean there is anything wrong for you. It just means that that particular toy didn't ring your bell. It's like if you try on a dress and you don't like the way you look in it, you don't go beat yourself up because there's something wrong. You try on a different dress, right?
Or you just take the dress off.
Oh, I love you, Tina Marie.
If we can wrap this up, we've talked about sexual wounds. We talked about how this connected, or at least launched, my personal journey into the world of ecosexuality. I guess the next step is then what? Identifying the source of our sexual or relationship wound is an important step. And then really getting at a deep fundamental level that nature suits us best, the step becomes then how do we do that? And that is where I invite people to join our group if they'd like on Facebook, the EcoSex group. They can contact you and I. But let's give them some freebies right now about what they can do.
How do you feel
about that? Okay. So you talked about lubrication. Vaginal dryness is one of the most common complaints women have during intercourse. And part of that is they're not taking enough time during the arousal and state of sex, which is a whole other topic. But rather than using something on your body, you mentioned KY jelly, there's other things over the counter. And, you know, I'll encourage people to go to As You Like It. Another one of our companies is called Sex Butter, Good Clean Love. They all make lubrications that are safe and natural. Sometimes the simplest thing, though, is a jar of coconut oil. Now, some people can have an allergic reaction to coconut oil. You want to get cold, first-pressed, organic, harvested coconut oil. You know, the great thing about it is you can use it everywhere, except I do have to caution people that it can't be used with condoms. You can't mix oil with latex condoms. It will degrade the condom. But that right there is... And the other thing, the nice thing about it is if you've got a jar of coconut oil by your bedside, no one's going to wonder whether it's for hanky-panky or not. They're just going to assume it's So your in-laws can come over and you don't have to hide your jar. It's not expensive, and it works really well for vaginal dryness as a lubrication. So there's a freebie for people, a low-cost natural alternative to toxic lubrication. That's a practical tip. I would love to invite people to actually try something novel, and that is to go spend time outdoors. You are a sentient being. You have eyes, ears, nose, lips, hands. We're really gifted to be sensual creatures. Children intuitively know this. They come into this world and just sponges and absorbing the feel of the wind on their face, the feel of the grass beneath their feet, the smell of a forest. In our tech-heavy modern living world, we lose sight of that. And so I want to invite people to realize the importance of non-sexual pleasure. I'm saying non-sexual because I don't want people to think that I'm saying they have to go outside and hump a tree. You know, keep yourself. Although walking in the forest with your partner can really, it could turn you on. You know, there are chemicals in the forest air that alleviate depression, and it can be certainly a loving, romantic place to get frisky and feisty. But get yourself to nature. This morning, I walked along the beach. I got my feet wet. I absorbed all the negative ions, which are good for me, on the shore. Really find a way to engage your natural senses. You need to turn yourself on. And that is, nature is in a constant state of arousal, which is why I'm saying to people, and I can't emphasize this enough, get yourself outdoors. If you're drawn to the forest, go hang out with trees. If you're a water, you know, you're into water, go swimming in the ocean. It sounds so simple. And people are going, really? This is going to improve my sex life? Yeah, it's going to improve your love life because it's waking you up to natural pleasure. And our bodies respond to that stimuli at a deep cellular level. I mean, just think about it. Sitting in the cubicle all day, taking a walk along the lakefront. Which experience are you more truly alive? And which experience brings you forward to your partner with greater vitality? So those would be two suggestions I have for people. Coconut butter and get yourself out in nature as a start towards opening up space for more pleasure. Now, I don't want to say that that's going to help a man if his penis goes limp. I mean, that's a different story. But we're talking about the ordinary person who just feels disconnected from meaningful intimacy. These are small baby steps they can take that don't cost a dime or cost very little. And it's part of what I use in my practice as a coach. It's one of the first things I do is I help the individual find out what brings them pleasure that doesn't involve technology, and then I get them out there doing it.
Yeah, beautiful stuff, Tina Marie. And I'd kind of like to jump in a little bit, too. I mean, I love how you shared that sometimes our opportunity with our sexuality is really nothing to do with sex at all. It's about our environment, our routine, our stress, our obligations, and taking a time out from those for choosing things that feel more natural and peaceful for you can be a huge help for you in dissipating any negative or toxic energy that's getting in the way of you having that fulfilling intimacy. You know, for a man in particular, you know, erectile dysfunction is, for the most part, a male problem. You know, if a man is really stressed and fried and burning the candle at both ends and freaking out about money and, you know, how the hell are you going to keep everything going on and, oh, no, you know, I got to perform tonight or I'm going to be in the doghouse, you know, it just doesn't really support the mission. And, you know, you got to take a time out. You got to be able to find a little bit of sanctuary in the middle of the chaos. And I loved all those different examples that you shared. And the beautiful part is that everybody gets to choose for themselves what they need to unwind and to relax and, you know, but just do something, you know, try something that's a little bit out of the routine. If there's something you absolutely can't stand, what can you do instead? And, you know, give yourself a little bit of time to be you. A perfect example here is like in the work world. Marianne Williamson wrote that work and business tends to put women in masculine mode. And, you know, it's very competitive, and, you know, so women tend to assume that masculine energy just to simply perform and thrive in the workspace. Well, you know, that's wonderful at work, but, you know, me personally, I don't want to make love to a man. So I want my wife to have a timeout to reconnect with the sensual goddess that she is, so we have the right energy in the bedroom. So here's a golden rule for everybody here, too. Make your bedroom a sacred space. No problems, no business, no junk, nothing but your sensuality crosses that threshold into that temple.
Oh, absolutely. That means no TV. In our house, that means no TV, organic sheets, a latex organic wool cotton mattress. I couldn't agree with you more of the importance of having a space that is designed to for rest and pleasure. And I know there's a lot of people who, if they hear that no TV, they're going to be like, you've got to be kidding me. I absolutely mean that. Turn your space into a place for sleep and pleasure. You need it.
Absolutely.
And have a love affair with nature and buy yourself a jar of coconut oil. And those, you know, and I don't. These are not meant to minimize the sexual or relationship wounds that people have. It's really to say there are steps we can take to heal, and those are in addition to the therapy, the counseling, the coaching, or the medical care. These are the nebulous and the creative healing arts. You know, the caller had asked about how we can incorporate allopathic and holistic medicine. These are things people can do for themselves to bring a little more natural joy to their sex life. So I hope that message. Thank you. I love it too, and I know it works because it's made a difference in my life.
Beautiful, and I'd like to invite anybody listening too. You know, if you're sexuality and fulfillment is not quite where you want it to be, hear what we're saying, but don't think you have to go on a quest to find out if you're wounded. Just, you know, just start opening up to what feels right for you. You know, just focus on what you want, not what you think might be out of balance. And as you do move forwards towards your sexuality and your fulfillment, you will naturally identify the things that are right for you, and what is not a fit will really start to become very rapidly available and visible. And, you know, it could even be your partner. You know, you're trying to make something happen where there's really no tangible connection. Nothing wrong with you, nothing wrong with them. It's just the magic's not there. And it, guess what? It's not something that you can fix single-handed. It's like, you know, the two oars on this boat. If you're rowing but they're not, you're going round in circles, baby. So, you know, you either need to find somebody who's going to row the way you want to, or wake up Prince Charming and tell him to get his ass in gear because you got some orgasms coming.
But if they're slow circles, Mark, we like them.
True. I love how you always put things in context, Sina.
We can talk about that next time. How's that?
I think we absolutely should. So, hey, we're down to a couple of minutes, so why don't you go ahead and share with us real quick how they can follow up with you, how they can find you on Facebook, and how we can get some sexual healing and...
Yes, people who are interested in working with me as their intimacy coach can contact me at echocoachtina@gmail.com. They can contact me at tinamarie@tinamariebernard.com. And they can come find me on Facebook. They can join us on our EcoSex group at Facebook. That's ECOSEX. If they do that, they'll find it. And I do have a program up on August 5th. Called Finding Your E-Spot, Create Meaningful Intimacy from the Earth Up. We are all about bodacious living naturally here and bodacious loving. So I invite people to contact me. That's tinamariebernard.com. And thank you so much, Mark, for allowing me to share my message and invite people to reach out to me and be able to hold space for them so that they too can be empowered to live and love meaningfully.
Tina Marie, the honor is absolutely mine. The difference you've made in my journey is amazing. And everybody listening, this is your life. You were created in perfection. You deserve the absolute best. Don't settle for anything else. So please take advantage of Tina Marie's contact information. Join us in the group or tune in again next week to find out what other juicy goodies we have to share. Tina Marie, thank you as always for dancing with me, and I'll talk with you real soon.
Absolutely. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Thank you for listening to Her Unfolding Journey with your host, Mark Semple.
Mark honors and appreciates each and every woman for who is allowing her journey to unfold. He is here every Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Earth Angels Radio and encourages you to join him. For more information on Mark, please visit his websites at www.herunfoldingjourney.com and www.thismanknowspassion.com. May you always see the gift of what you bring into this world.